Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and one of the reasons for the rise of Donald Trump is the nostalgia of his base for an America they feel is being lost, hence the slogan, Make America Great Again. But what was that past, really? With me now is one of America's best at busting false nostalgia. This happens to be the 25th anniversary of Stephanie Kuntz's classic book, The Way We Never Were, American Families and the Nostalgia Trap. It has just been re-released with a lot of new material. Stephanie Kuntz is professor of history and family studies at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington, but is here in New York today, so she's here in our studio. Welcome back to WNYC.
Well, thanks, Brian.
Your book came out when Bill Clinton was running for president. Remind us what the nostalgia trap was for you at that time. What myths about past family life did you think were making it harder for American families in the real world of the 1991 present?
Well, at that time, there was a myth, and there's still, still plenty of those around, that families of the past were self-reliant, that they never asked for handouts. The frontier family, which, contrary to the Bundys and other people like that, was the most reliant on federal subsidies than any other family form, except perhaps the 1950s white suburban family. So there were a lot of myths about that. A lot of myths about how families of the past used to protect women and children from violence, when in fact infanticide and child abuse and inter-partner violence were much higher in the 1950s than they are today.
And Trump's America, Great Make America Great Again nostalgia seems focused first on economic and military nostalgia, less on family structure nostalgia, though he's certainly a throwback in the way he feels it's okay to talk about women. So how would you compare the heart of the nostalgia trap of 1992 and any nostalgia trap you might be seeing today?
Well, you know, in some ways I can understand why people are nostalgic for some of the economy of the 1950s, especially if you're a white male. That was an era where their real wages were rising steadily. A young man in the early 1960s was making four times as much in real wages as his father had. You know, that's the sort of thing that makes you feel like, yeah, I want to settle down. Yeah, I'm going to move forward. Since 1980, such young men have earned less than their fathers did. So there's a little element of that. On the other hand, we are seeing a lot of nostalgia traps, not only now from conservatives, but also I think from some liberals and centrists who think that they want to go back to a time when there was more civility and bipartisanship. Well, that bipartisanship was perfectly compatible with total racism, with sexism, with incredible violence against gays and lesbians, and of course, pockets of poverty that were just huge. So I think that it's never good to try to move forward by looking backwards.
So you think, different from 1991, we have a kind of false liberal nostalgia to go with a false conservative nostalgia?
Well, I think there is some reality in thinking, you know, this was a time when economics were a little better for working people. But of course, what gets lost, and among liberals as well as conservatives, is that this was also a time when there was, when 30% of the workplace was unionized, when corporations paid twice as much in real terms of taxes. As the, you know, and there were all of these things going on that are not there now, and we're not going to get to them by looking back. We're going to have to find new ways to move forward.
Now, you and your publisher, Basic Books, have given us such a yummy 10-question family nostalgia quiz that I'm going to invite our listeners to call up and take it. This is called Test Your Family IQ, folks. So whoever is game to take a quiz question, call in and we'll do this together at 212-433-WNYC as a way of talking about some of the content in Stephanie Kuntz's book, The Way We Never Were. 212-433-9692. To give you an idea of what kinds of questions, I will read number one. Number one, what was the least traditional family arrangement in history? A, monogamy. B, polygyny. So we'll define that when we get to it. C, polyandry. D, the male breadwinner family. Or E, unmarried cohabitation. We'll go over them again with you when you call in. What was the least traditional family arrangement in history. So if you think you know the answer to that or just want to try your hand at others like it, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. There are no prizes except bragging rights, but also there's no punishment for wrong answers, so it's a risk-free family IQ test, not a high-stakes test, so opt in just for fun. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And so while people are calling in and getting in line, you've also given us a list of the 10 things that have changed since the 1990s in ways that almost no one predicted at the time. So let's go down some of these. Number one is, you pose it as a question, whatever happened to the super predators?
Yes, and that was something that both Democrats and Republicans were really worried about. There was this idea that somehow the decline in marriage and the rise in unwed births and the rise in divorce was going to create a generation of immoral, completely violent super predators who were going to take us over. And Hillary Clinton used those words as well as the Republicans. And yet what's happened? Since 1994, the juvenile crime rate has fallen by 60%. In 2013, the murder rate reached its all-time low since they were taking records in 1960, even though the increase of unwed motherhood has occurred by 40%.
Here's number three. We're not going to have time to do all 10. Another of the 10 things that have changed since the 1990s in ways almost no one predicted at the time. Number three, did career women start outsourcing their children's developmental care?
Yes, there was a lot of concern that the women would be spending less time with their kids. And actually, women's time with kids did, parental time with kids did fall between 1965 and 75. But actually, it's gone up since then. Men have tripled their time with kids. Women have increased. Today's unwed mothers and working moms spend more time with their kids than married homemakers did back in 1965.
All right. You want to take a caller who wants that first quiz question? It is Linda in East Orange. Hi, Linda. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. How are you?
Good. So what was the least traditional family arrangement in history? Monogamy? Polygyny? See, I should know this word, but it's...
Polygyny, one man, many women.
Polygyny, one man, many women. Polyandry, the male breadwinner family, or unmarried cohabitation?
This is the least.
The least traditional family arrangement in history. I guess this is an opinion of Stephanie Kuntz being reflected in this question. What would you say?
I'm going to say monogamy. Monogamy.
Stephanie?
Well, it may be in practice. You may be right. But as a real model, I would say the male breadwinner family was the least traditional. That was an invention. That concept was completely unknown until the late 18th century. Before then, men, women, and children worked together to make families work, you know?
Linda, go ahead. You want to say something about that?
Can I just say this? Go on.
Go ahead, Stephanie.
Oh, I was just going to say, in colonial days, men didn't bring home the bacon. Women made the bacon and took it to market.
Linda, thank you very much. All right. Let's try somebody else here. Alice in Brooklyn, you ready for the next question?
Sure.
What was the earliest historical function of marriage? A, to feed and protect women and children. B, to provide a labor force for the male household head. C, neither of the above. Or D, both of the above. So, to feed and protect women and children, to provide a labor force for the male household head, or both of those, or neither of those?
I guess I would guess both of them.
Well, in some days, both of them were byproducts of it in different ways and in different societies. But the more I've studied the history of marriage, the more I realize that the institution had very little to do with the relationship between the individual man and women. It had to do with getting in-laws. That was the way that you formed military alliances, expanded your family labor force, made business deals, and that was why, for thousands of years, marriage was not about love and it was not about free choice.
Alice, thank you very much. John in Bradley Beach, want to try one?
You bet.
In most of 19th century America, at which age could an unmarried woman legally consent to sex? 7, 12, 18, 21, or never in most of 19th century America? At which age could an unmarried woman...
But I have to guess that it's like 12.
You are correct, unless you lived in Delaware. 7, it was in Delaware.
7?
Yes.
Come on.
No, I'm not kidding you.
I thought the answer was going to be never, because an unmarried woman could never legally consent to sex.
Well, you know, that leads to another big myth of a sexually more virtuous past. And in fact, there were more prostitutes per capita in the 19th century than there are today. And they were often very, very young.
Were there 12-year-olds getting married? Were there 7-year-olds getting married in Delaware?
No, there were probably not 7-year-olds. There were 12-year-olds occasionally. But the point is that these women were not considered able to consent to sex, so that you couldn't go after the males who were predators.
7. And that's an unmarried woman legally consenting to sex. All right, we'll move on with Roberto in Syosset. Hi, Roberto. Ready?
Yes.
All right, let's see. This is a long one. Which of the following statements are false? So I guess, Stephanie, any number of these statements could be false, right?
Yes.
So, okay, so we'll do a true or false rapid fire with you, Roberto, on all 5. When a woman marries a man with less education than she has, this is a risk factor for divorce. True or false?
True.
Let's go till the end and see how they go.
Okay. We're going to hold. Well, I think it's going to be clearer because we're on the radio.
Okay.
To go one at a time.
All right. No, false. Used to be true, but now it's false.
All right. B, when two people cohabit and have a baby together before getting married, they have a higher risk of divorce than when they wait until after marriage to have a child. True or false, Roberto?
False.
Well, it was true until the 1994. They had a 60% higher chance of getting divorced. But in the most recent cohort of individuals, you're absolutely right. It does not make a difference.
Ah, so the first two here have changed since the 1990s.
Yes.
Which is part of the point.
Yes.
Why do you think that one changed?
Well, I think what's happening is that despite all of the economic problems and some sliding back that we've engaged in, that we really have moved forward in terms of adjusting ourselves to family diversity and especially to women's new roles. So we're seeing all sorts of transformation in, you know, what we used to think of the rules of divorce and marriage and the effects of cohabitation and all of those things that tend to favor more individuality and diversity.
All right. See, Roberto. Women who marry for the first time at an older age than average have a heightened risk of divorce. True or false?
False.
Again, used to be true and false. You're doing good, Roberto.
These are trick questions.
Another one that used to be true. So it used to be true that women who married at an older than average age had a higher risk for divorce?
Yes. Back in the 60s, it was true.
And D, men report lower levels of work-family stress than women. True or false?
False.
Absolutely right. Again, back in the early 70s, they did report lower. Now they report just as high, and in some polls, even higher.
All right. We are documenting the change from the 1990s. We'll do one more to end this set. Roberto, couples who share housework and child care equally have less sex and lower rates of marital satisfaction than couples with a more traditional division of labor.
I have 2 little kids. True.
Oh, I'm sorry that you said that, because it was true for marriages as of the 92-94. But it may be true in the first year. Maybe. I don't know. But for certain, Roberto's wife isn't listening. Yeah, right. Actually, I hope she is listening and that he's listening well, because what we know from marriages formed in the 90s and later, that these are the couples with the highest levels of sexual satisfaction.
Who do share housework and childcare. And again,
equally.
It used to be true?
Exactly. It used to be true that they had the lower levels.
So all of, and Roberto, thank you so much. 4 out of 5 ain't bad. You've really documented a lot of changes here. And I guess in a way, what we just heard, all that set of 5 adds up to sort of progress as possible.
Yes, it does. It does. Although there are some non-changes, for example, like the fact that our work family policies haven't caught up with these realities, which is why men now have as much high stress as women do.
And in some cases, you say in the new version of the book, new edition, that we've gone backwards.
Oh, yes. For example, in birth control and abortion rights.
We have a minute left. I'm just curious to get kind of a big think notion from you on the idea of nostalgia. The book is The Way We Never Were, American Families and the Nostalgia Trap. Very influential book in my own thinking over time. And I wonder how you see, is there good nostalgia and bad nostalgia to you?
Yeah, on a personal level, nostalgia can be very useful. You know, speaking as a woman, forgetting the pain of childbirth, you would never have a second one if you didn't. And if it, you know, if it helps kids, as it does, remember vacations more favorably, so they're more willing to do that. But on a social and political level, when it gets turned into a social and political program, that's the problem with nostalgia.
The Way We Never Were, American Families and the Nostalgia Trap, now out in a 25th anniversary revised and updated edition. Stephanie Kuntz teaches at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Brian. Mm-hmm.